You're going out there to destroy them.
That's the plan.
All right, I'm in.
The first time she survived the most terrifying creature in the universe, she thought the nightmare was over.
Something under the floor.
It hadn't even begun.
Coming straight for us.
That's inside the room.
Sigourney Weaver, Aliens, the new movie. This time, it's war.
Although edited for television, tonight's thriller contains scenes of suspense and violence which may be unsuitable for young viewers. Parental discretion is advised.
Excerpt from the foreword, In Comics No One Can Hear You Scream, from the trade paperback collection of Alien Stronghold by Mort Todd. Many people pick up the various Dark Horse Aliens products because of the original movie series, not because they are what you call traditional comics readers. And while comics and film are two similar but very different mediums of storytelling, this collection of Alien Stronghold is one of the most cinematographic comics ever published. This is due in no small part to the exceptional creative talents of writer John Arcudi and artist Doug Monkey, who fashioned the four-issue series with such an amazing plot that you are forced to keep turning the pages as you absorb the visual detail and storyline. From the very first page, when Andy approaches the camera and pulls out to reveal the alien queen, the pacing of the story and art draw you into Stronghold like a film would. Like a good horror movie, this story inspires fear, a sense of excitement, and plenty of laughs. Laughs in an alien story? Sure, there's a thin line between horror and humor, and the Arcudi Monkey team knows how to straddle it like a bucking bronco. Amongst the gore, there are guffaws in a way that make the characters seem more real, if not more human, since many of the leads are not actually Homo sapiens. The tension between Dean and Jerry in Stronghold is amusing, and you wonder if the talking alien synthetic has a high nasally voice that the French would love when he banters with the armored, specialized synthetic Dean. In some hands, it would be considered a creative crutch in the soundless medium of comics to further the plot by giving a usually speechless alien a voice. Here, however, it adds to the singularity of Jerry. Besides, the creators have proven that they can tell a story with a mute character, as seen in the recently released, and assuredly in the future, award-winning, masked spin-off series, Walter. There are several well-fleshed-out personalities in Stronghold, making you despise, relate to, or sympathize with the various characters. You become more involved as the story unfolds. Who is the actual villain of the story? Is it the aliens? Casper Nordling or the synthetic Dr. Payne? What is the true mission of Philip and Joyce Strunk? Will Lizzie revolt? And can you really trust the talking, cigar-smoking alien named Jerry? These questions are raised and unexpectedly answered as the tale takes you on a roller coaster ride of thrills, chills, and visceral spills. Detail is paramount in an Arcudi script, and it really shines when combined with the art of Monkey. Comic stories are not created in a vacuum, though Stronghold is set in one. And hardcore Aliens fans will notice elements from the movies and other Dark Horse Aliens series. Though working within an existing continuity, Arcudi and Monkey have succeeded in making this story their own. Comics creators are not nurtured in a vacuum either. In case you didn't know, John and Doug have worked in comics for years, separately and together. They're most notably known as the original team that brought us the outrageous star of comics, film and TV, The Mask, as we know him today. If you haven't read the first two Mask comic series, do yourself a favor and get the collected trade paperbacks of The Mask and The Mask Returns from Dark Horse, and be ready to have some unadulterated fun. There you'll see the creative evolution of the Arcudi Monkey Force that has flowered into Walter and the upcoming Mask Lobo crossover from Dark Horse and DC Comics. On their own, Arcudi and Monkey's talents have complemented other popular titles, like John's run on Barbed Wire, another comic movie comic, and Doug's contribution to the Dark Horse superhero X. As with X, Doug's pencils for Stronghold are more than ably assisted by fan-favorite inker Jimmy Palmiotti, who plies his trade on the last three chapters. Meanwhile, as they say in the funny books, sit back and get ready to witness an alien adventure bigger than the blockbuster movie series that inspired it, with enough plot twists and visuals to leave you twisted. You won't soon forget the horrific images and concepts within these pages. And remember, in comics, no one can hear you scream. Mort Todd, New York, New York, 1996. Mort Todd is a video director, producer, storyboard artist, and former editor of Cracked and the Marvel Music line of Music Comics. His eighth album cover for the Back from the Grave Garage Punk compilations has just been released from Crypt Records.
I'm still kind of curious why you had me read this, so this is going to be interesting.
I myself do not own that trade paperback. I read this introduction in the Marvel Omnibus Aliens Original Years Volume 2. This is the last story from that omnibus. Usually what I do with guests, you've never heard the show, right?
No.
No, okay. So what I usually do with the guests is I'll give them some sort of title within the Aliens universe, like whether a Colonial Marine or they work for Weyland-Yutani or some bullshit like that, and I let them pick whatever they want to be. So what role do you want to have in the Aliens universe?
I'm a predator.
You're a fucking Yautja? Yeah. How do you say that? Yautja?
I think it's Yautja, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So are you a human Yautja or are you just plain old alien?
Oh, that's a good one, huh? Because that was pretty cool, that Aliens versus Predators, where the farm girl is respected by the Predators. Now I want to be a straight-up Yautja. I want to be the one that chases Danny Glover through the city.
There you go. Well, he dies. You want Danny Glover to kill
you? Or does he? Because remember, there were multiple Predators, so you never knew which one they were really hunting.
They kill one
at the end, but remember that cool scene where all of a sudden all the Predators pop up?
Mm-hmm. So you're just part of the party, not necessarily the one that fought Danny Glover.
True.
Okay, done deal. Cool. So second thing, what is your experience with Aliens? Like, where was your entry point into the universe?
I remember seeing Aliens 1 when I was a child on a black and white TV in our kitchen as we were eating dinner on a Sunday evening. When they used to show like the late movie, but like the Sunday night movie. I don't know if you remember those, remember? Where they'd be like a special presentation type movie. Something that was kind of recent.
Yeah, 100% remember that because all three of the networks used to do it. ABC, CBS, NBC. I think maybe even Fox might have tried it at some point, briefly. But because they always had counter-programming most of the time, they didn't usually have a lot of that. But yeah, I absolutely know what you're talking about. Probably, like you said, on a Sunday night, that's when they would usually do the broadcast premieres.
Yeah. So I kind of remember watching Aliens while eating dinner with my family. And that was my exposure to Aliens. The next time would be being taken to the movies to go see Aliens 2 and just having my mind blown by Aliens 2.
Do you remember which theater you went to and who you went with?
My mother, she was it was a guy that she was dating, and he was taking us plus his kid. Just a regular little theater. I had no idea what we were going to go see. It was kind of like, my mom has always been the sci-fi. What do you call it?
Aficionado.
Yeah, she's the one that got me into sci-fi, so I don't know if it was her or he picked the movie, but I remember we went to go see it, and I remember sitting there watching and thinking like, what the fuck am I watching? Like, and I didn't connect Alien 1 and Alien 2 right away because I had seen Aliens 1 like on TV and I didn't really see it again, and I saw Aliens 2 and was blown away by it, and then went seeking to see Alien again, the first one.
Now your mom, as you mentioned, she's a huge sci-fi person. Do you know if she saw Alien the original from 79 back in the theater?
Or I'd have to ask her. I'm pretty sure,
because the one thing with that is she's a sci-fi person, but I don't know if she's really much of a horror person, right?
She's not a big horror, but she loves sci-fi. So, you know, I remember her telling me, seeing the original Planet of the Apes. We just talked about how she took me to see the original Star Wars, and you know, I've seen all those Star Wars movies in theaters. So yeah, if it was sci-fi, we would have gone. I mean, hell, we saw what was that movie with, oh man, Vern.
Hey Vern, I just saw this movie. It's called Dr. Otto and the Riddle of the Gloom Beam. It's really good. It's about this doctor named Otto, and he's got this gloom beam. It's this thing that zaps computers, and he's got this changing coffin that changes him. There's this guy named Lance Sterling who's trying to stop him, and there's this monster named The Dump, and there's this cute little robot called Slave Willie, and there's ghosts and pirates, and it's really neat, Vern. Especially the part I'm in. But you know, Vern, I think you'd like it a whole lot better if you saw it at the theater. Know what I mean?
Coming soon, Dr. Otto and the Riddle of the Gloom Beam in a couple of desperate theaters near you.
Oh, yeah, I know you're talking about the Ernest P. Worrell movie, the weird one.
Yeah, the one where
he's got the fingers on his hands. Yeah, or fingers on his head, yeah.
If it had sci-fi, we were going to go check it out.
Does your mom have any particular interest in the Alien franchise?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay.
I mean, I'll watch something and I'll bring it to her attention. Like, you know, I got her to sit down and watch the new Blade Runner and she liked it. But I don't think my mom goes out and seeks these movies anymore. I mean, Dune, she's very interested in seeing Dune too, because we watched the first Dune together and she loved it.
At least you saw them in order. I saw Aliens and then went back to Alien. You saw Alien first, but apparently it didn't imprint on you as strongly. Is it because you were seeing it in black and white, or is it just a stronger reaction to Aliens?
Again, we had a small TV in the kitchen, so it was one of those things where, you know, you saw it on a small TV. I remember being scared. The two scenes that pop up to me, of course, is when John Hurt has the alien pop out of him. I remember that, and the scene with the android spitting up milk, which I thought at the time. Those two scenes stuck out in my mind, and I remember being more scared of the movie. But again, we're talking about watching this on a little black and white TV in the kitchen. As it's on a counter, we're sitting at the kitchen table trying to eat, and I'm trying to watch but also eat my mashed potatoes at the same time. So, and I hadn't fully mastered the multitask needed for something like that at the time. The John Hurt part, I remember seeing that and I was thinking like, oh yeah, that's gonna leave something in my mind for the rest of the night. And then the android spitting up milk, I remember thinking like, why is he spitting up milk?
Right.
I couldn't place it yet that, you know, blood.
It is a little weird. And again, you have to know, watching shit movies in black and white was sort of an art, because you couldn't necessarily tell what something was because it's in black and white. So
let me correct myself. It wasn't a black and white TV, but it wasn't a TV that had like fucking 4K colors and shit. The colors were definitely muted. I can't remember if it was black. I don't want to say it was black and white. Cause I kind of remember seeing a little bit of color. I mean, you remember those old TVs that you had in the kitchen, right?
Yeah. I mean, again, these things were barely larger than a tablet with a fraction of the resolution.
Correct. So, I mean, I remember you could make out the blacks. I could make out the milk. I could make out like reds colors. But of course, all colors were muted.
And then you saw aliens in the theater. And just seeing it theatrically is probably going to be more of an experience. But did it impact on you more strongly because you were older, or were you just more drawn into that story?
I remember watching it thinking like, oh, this is fucking G.I. Joe in space. Like, that was the first thought that went through my head. Loved it from the drop. The alien itself, I remembered what it looked like. And I'm like, I've seen this creature before, but I couldn't put those two movies together. And I remember seeing Sigourney Weaver, and I didn't quite understand when she was talking about, like, being in space. And what was his name? The villain, not the villain, but the squirmy guy, Carter Burke. Like, you know, Carter being, like, when they're talking about her, you know, being lost in space, I couldn't put them together. Now, when I went back and rewatched the first one, it enhanced the second one 10 times fold.
Well, and this is an instance, too, where you definitely had sequels before Aliens, but that's a pretty tight comic booky continuity, too. In a way that maybe Godfather 1 and 2 doesn't feel the same way since it's more of a family drama. This is like, I had this confrontation and this location, and it just feels more comic booky.
Well, I love the fact, too, that they're talking about how, like, you know, she had been floating in space for so long, you know, her daughter was an elderly woman now. Was she? In the movie, was her daughter still alive?
No, that's something they referenced in the director's cut about a decade later. It was on, I think, the first it was on the Laserdisc, and then they had a special 10th anniversary VHS release. That one of my customers at the comic shop that we were at, he actually gave me a copy, and so that was my first time getting to see those scenes. You were aware of it if you read magazines, it's like some of the sci-fi magazines and stuff, but they didn't actually have it on film for you to watch until Laserdisc about a decade later.
Because I remember you gave me the director's cut, the one, because there's that one scene I love where they have the automatic guns and they're just doing the countdown of the ammunition.
Yeah, probably what happened is when I upgraded to DVD, I probably gave you that same VHS.
No, you gave me a burnt version. I still have the burnt version.
Less said about that, the better. And then, of course, we've both upgraded to, you've got 4K, I've got Blu-ray, so we've bought this in multiple formats, and especially as the time goes by, when we saw what probably gets a little hazy.
During COVID, I did a Alien, because, you know, everyone's stuck at home. I watched Alien, Aliens 2, Aliens 3, Resurrection, and then I watched, what was the fucking, the one with the,
You talking about Covenant?
Covenant.
Or Prometheus?
Prometheus, and then I watched The Covenant.
What about the AVPs?
I've seen them all. I agree with Fryhole. The second one is better, but it's so dark. Half the movie, you lose a lot. But, I mean, you have a fucking, you know, facehugger jumping on a kid. That's a pretty fucked up movie. But still, out of all the Alien Predator movies, but I kind of like the first one, too, where they're out in the snow and they have the temple and, you know, the human sacrifices and stuff like that.
Yeah, and Pussycat saw that one together, as I recall.
Did we?
I think we saw that at Edwards,
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like something we would have definitely gone down a group thing on,
And I don't think you liked it as much the first time. I think it might have grown on you.
So
I think you were bitching about it when we left the first time.
Yeah, some of these movies, I think they've grown on me. Like, I won't lie, I've rewatched Ant-Man, the new one, because it's on Disney+, and it held up a little better this time. I didn't bash on it as much. I think sometimes some of these movies, they just need a little time, like wine. You got to open them up and let them breathe a little bit, and you're okay with it. Or I'm just getting old, one or the other. Who knows?
So talking about the different movies, though, did you see Alien 3 theatrically?
I think I've seen them all theatrically, to tell you the truth.
And how did you respond? Because for a lot of people, that was a deal-breaker movie. They just hated that movie. It's a weird thing, because I know that the continuity and losing the characters from Aliens would have been traumatic for you, but you also tend to really like fucked up dark turns.
Yeah, honestly, I liked it. I liked that the alien was a dog now, that they were on this weird prison planet / monastery. It was definitely a different take. I remember liking it. I was disappointed it was only one alien, because I thought Aliens always works best when it's multiple, because it's scarier when they're coming from all directions compared to just one. Because the first movie was scary because it was one and they're in a tight little ship. This one, they're in a big monastery / prison planet, and it just felt like, I kept waiting for her. During the movie, I thought that the queen alien was going to pop up sooner than she did.
And then I know I did not see Resurrection with you, because I have a whole story about that one, and that might have been before you and I were hanging out outside the shop. What was your circumstance there?
Went to the theater, saw it. I started laughing out loud when the alien got sucked out the window. I was that asshole that laughed out loud in the theater.
This was the one where you've got the clone Ripley and Winona Ryder and the stupid little skull-faced hybrid.
Ron Perlman. I love Ron Perlman. Always loved him since when he was Beauty and the Beast, when he was Beast back in the day on TV, on was that CBS? Loved him. So I was kind of excited when I saw he was going to be in the movie. I was already kind of on board with the Aliens franchise, so I was cool with that. And the first half of the movie is great. I love it. You know, how they have the aliens, they're testing them, the aliens, how they break out of their jail. All that is cool. The weird hybrid human alien thing was, that's when I was kind of like, okay, this is getting a little fucking weird. Like, he's white, he has a human face, but he's still alien. And I'm thinking, well, there's going to be this grand battle. Because, of course, I'm thinking Aliens 2. They have that great, you know, where she's fighting it with the giant suit, mech suit. Even on Aliens 3, they have this cool plan where it's chasing them through the building and they drop with that hot lead on it and smashing them. So I'm waiting for that. And they shoot a hole in the window and it gets sucked out a window. Which was still kind of cool, just kind of fucking weird.
And of course, this one was written by Joss Whedon, but he said that they spoke the words I put on the page, but they didn't do it the right way and the wrong people were doing it. Do you think that's the case, or do you just think it was a bad idea in general?
Well, I know he was a script doctor at the time.
Do you think it would have been a better movie if Joss Whedon had directed it at that time? Or do you think it was better off in the hands of the actual director?
I have to agree with Machine on this. He did a great Avengers movie, but then when he did the Age of Ultron, he just, I don't know. I don't think he's as great a director as he thinks he is. Though I do love Firefly and Serenity. Those are some of my favorites. Honestly, I don't know. I can't really judge on that one. Because again, I thought the movie was, for the most part, pretty enjoyable. And I mean, it didn't kill it for me. It wasn't like a fucking deal-ender or deal-breaker for me. It was just kind of like, it's kind of weird, like shooting out a window and having the alien get sucked out. I'm remembering that correctly, am I not?
It's been a while since I've seen it, but that sounds right. I think that's probably what happened. Yeah. I just focus on the hybrid alien, so I completely forgot about the other alien, you know.
Yeah. Oh, no, that was a great scene where they were showing, like, where they kept reproducing her to try to create. And she technically is, like, a hybrid human alien because she does have acid for blood. So shit like that was cool. And cool fun fact, apparently she did that three-pointer shot from behind the back was actually her, no CG. Went tried to, yeah.
So what about the two prequels, the Prometheus and Aliens Covenant?
I rewatched Prometheus. I think I might have fallen asleep during it. I mean, Covenant was better. Except for the weird starfish fucking creature at the end that got really weird. Or was that Covenant? I can't remember. Because I watched them either almost a day apart. Not even a day apart, like back to back. Like I watched one and then the next day I watched the other one. Because we were trapped in the house. And I was just going through my DVD collection or my Blu-ray collection. And I really was just testing how good my Blu-rays looked on TV and stuff. They didn't leave a lasting memory on me too much. I mean, I'm pretty sure I enjoyed them. I would say I enjoyed probably Alien vs. Predator more. Because they're big, dumb, goofy movies. But they're still fun. And then, of course, you know, I'm a huge Predator fan. I know you're the more alien guy. I'm more of the Predator guy. So I'm more, you know, you want to talk Predator? I'm down. I've watched a lot of shit on Predators.
Yeah, I'm holding you in reserve for a Predator discussion. We're just staying on the aliens track for this one.
And this is Predator the Alien, not Catch a Predator.
No, your sister's not here to lay those jokes out. Thanks. Did you ever do anything with the expanded media, like video games, action figures, any of that stuff?
I think I did play some of the, I think I played the Predator game where you run around as a Predator. I played that Isolation game, the one with the alien one where it's supposed to be all tension.
I bought that, never played it, and just loaned it to you until you played
it. And I played it a little bit and I kind of liked it. I'm trying to think, did I play any other alien games? I can't, nothing comes to mind.
None of the arcade games, no Nintendo, Sega,
I played the shooter one. I think there was one where you were a Marine and you're shooting them with the guns. I remember playing, I think, that in an arcade, but that's the only one comes to mind. But I can't think of any, like, Aliens is one of the things where I've read more of the books and the comics and the movies. I don't think I've interacted with the games as much, and I think I've had, like, one or two toys. Fryhole gave me this cool little alien that I have up in my man cave, and I think I bought at one time, or someone had bought me the chest burster. It's like a scarf, so it kind of goes around your neck and stuff like that, but I don't know where it's at anymore. And that's in terms of, like, product-wise. I never had an Aliens t-shirt, which is kind of disappointing. I'm going to have to rectify that. I do have a toy, some of the books.
Yeah, I was going to ask you too.
I actually bought, like, I bought a Giger book just because it had a lot of the cool alien stuff in there. But he sexualized it with tits and shit like that. So it was pretty cool. Tits and vaginas. So that was pretty cool. Pretty much it.
Yeah, that's one thing of interest to me too. You keep referencing the books. Did you pick up some of the novels?
Some of them. I never read any of the novelization of the movies, Predator vs. Alien comics. I used to pick up a lot of the Dark Horse comics.
So not so much books, like prose novels, as comic books.
Correct. Okay, I was more into the graphic novels.
We're working our way to the comics, so I don't want to go to the comics just yet. But it is interesting because there was a period there where I still don't understand how this is supposed to work, is they were doing novelizations of 4-issue comic book miniseries, and I can't understand how you can get a novel's worth of material out of 4 issues, you know, right?
Yeah.
And they did this for each of the Dark Horse miniseries in order until Music of the Spears, which is the one I covered last month, and this is the first time they've been doing that series where they've stopped. So there's no novel for the book that we're going to cover today, Stronghold. Just putting that out there. But now, as far as the comics, though, what comics did you buy and when did you buy them?
Well, I used to buy the Dark Horse Presents, you know, where they'd have like little stories from everything, like, you know, Alien, Predator, The Mask. And I would kind of read through those. And then, you know, I have the one series Hive, where like the red and blue aliens were on a planet. And I think one of them's a robot. I picked up the Mike Mignola one where the priest lands on a planet with aliens. I vaguely remember that. I just remember the Mike Mignola artwork was beautiful on that one. I think I read Aliens versus Judge Dredd. I want to say that's real, or it could be.
No, you're absolutely right. That is real. That
okay, I was like, am I staring into an alternate universe? Because
I think there's two.
I vaguely remember reading that thing because I remember I was into Judge Dredd because I watched the Stallone movie and I'm like, well, the book got to be better than the fucking movie because the movie was garbage, but let's just check it out. And I remember some people had told me about Judge Dredd and like all these fucked up versions of it. So I was like, let me give it a try. And I just picked up the Alien was my gateway to Judge Dredd. So I've read some Dredd stuff, not a lot, but some of it. But Alien versus Judge Dredd, Alien versus Predator.
Did you ever read the miniseries that Sam Keith did?
No.
And you got some of the trades, I take it, too?
Some of them. Kitties out there, you know, your public library does sell books to keep themselves funded. And maybe before you ask me to read this, I just happened to go to my local public library to pick up some stuff that I get my books to the library. I'm not going to buy shit. I'm a cheap bastard. Well, they were selling those old trades, the little books that Freiholm
talking about the like omnibuses, the white, the little square-bound white books.
Yeah, Freiholm loaned me his so I could read it for this. And apparently those go for like 30, 40 bucks. Yeah, I picked it up for 50 cents. They just had it for sale. So I was kind of like, hey, I can add this to my collection because I kind of wanted something aliens in my collection. Batman versus Aliens. He did do that, right? Or was it just Predator?
No, you're right. It was later. It was several years later, but they did eventually do, okay, two Batman versus Aliens.
I feel sometimes like I might have created these stories in my mind because I was reading so much comics at the time. But I think I had that trade.
I'm sure you had Wildcats Aliens.
Oh, yeah, of course. That was the awesome one where fucking aliens are just wiping out the Wildcats, which apparently is hard to get nowadays. Am I correct?
I haven't gone looking. I bought mine new.
Because I know the ambiances, those are the ones that are supposed to be hard to get. Dude, I picked up a lot of shit at your shop. So I would go through your quarter boxes and find all kinds of stuff there that I still have to this day. I think I went, at one point, I was trying to collect the comic versions of Aliens. At one time, I think I was trying to collect that. And I was kind of looking for that. Let's see. No, that's all I can think of offhand in terms of Aliens.
Was there any particular motivation for picking up those books, or did you just like Aliens and was interested in Alien stories?
I like the aliens. I thought they were cool as shit. The Apex killing machine type thing, you know. It was just an interesting book. I like the fact that they attack in groups. No, I mean, it's sci-fi, dude. You know, you're going to read it. But it's more sci-fi horror, where I would say, like, Predator's more sci-fi action. Or would you consider him sci-fi horror?
No, I agree. I think Aliens skews more toward horror and Predator skews more toward action, which describes me as well. You know, I like action, too, but I'm definitely more of a horror guy. And that's probably part of the reason why I favor Aliens.
Yeah.
I'd completely forgotten this existed. I really didn't pay much attention to it, even when it was coming out. Dark Horse had another UK magazine called Total Carnage.
Comics with an Attitude!
First issue was released in 1994. I don't have any deeper dating than that. I don't think Mike's Amazing World has it on his website. They show Grendel Prime on the cover, painted by Simon Bisley, and it actually says introducing Grendel, I guess perhaps for the UK market. There's apparently reprints of the Batman vs. Predator miniseries, Bloodbath in Gotham, plus Mystic Mayhem in Army of Darkness, The Mask, when Lethal Weapon 3 videos, and it comes with a free tattoo, which is a heart that says Total Carnage, Comics with an Attitude on a banner, and then the heart is bleeding blood. So for you completed out there, it might be something to look into. Issue number 2 has an entirely new logo, features Ash Williams as painted by John Bolton on the cover of the Army of Darkness adaptation. Atop the banner is the phrase, "Your mother wouldn't like Carnage," and then Ash says in a funnily lettered caption, "But then we don't like your mother." You also have the opportunity to win £200 worth of videos, and that's pounds in English sterling, not, you know, American weight. I mean, maybe £200 worth of videos might weigh £200. I don't know. Issue number 3, Not for Kitties, Total Carnage. I guess they're going to change their catchphrase with every issue. It's a shame they immortalized one of them on a tattoo. This one has a cover of The Predator. I'm not sure who the artist is. I'm leaning toward Dave Dorman, but it's sort of like an extreme close-up. I think it's one of the variant covers from the Batman vs. Predator miniseries. I don't know if the mask was in the previous installments, but he joins Army of Darkness, Grendel. Schwarzenegger, spotlight on the vast action hero. Ba-dum-bum-psh. Free competition, win last Boy Scout videos. Total Carnage number 4 goes back to Army of Darkness for another John Bolton cover. Ash is saying groovy, no catchphrase. 50 prizes to be won in our great Army of Darkness competition. Features, photos, Cynthia Rothrock, Full Metal Jacket, Brandon Lee, and the return of the Comics with Attitude. I think it's actually been in the bottom corner of most of the issues. I was just giving them shit. Total Carnage number 5 goes back to Bisley, Grendel Prime. They're definitely screwing around the logo with pretty much issue by issue. They've got Grendel Prime saying, "Chew on that, punk!" Another one of these raw Lobo style. Pretty much all the cover balloons have that raw lettering. Death stalks the swamps in Grendel. And who shall rule in Gotham? Batman vs. Predator. Plus Medieval Evil in Army of Darkness, the official movie adaptation. Extra Blade Runner, the creator's cut dissected. Total Carnage number 6, Dave Dorman Predator cover taken from the, what do you call it, a tetrarch, the four-part gatefold cover from Dark Horse Comics number 1. Predator saying, "What you looking at?" Predator triumphant in this issue's Batman vs. Predator. Exclusive interview with Chow Yun-Fat. Win videos of The Unforgiven and Planet of the Apes. Number 7, back to Army of Darkness. I don't know if this is a cover or an interior page. Ash is saying, "Move it or lose it," to his evil doppelganger. Extra, Star Trek, Clint Eastwood, Sean Connery. Win Stephen King videos. Number 8, back to Simon Bisley, Grendel Prime. Horror on the High Season, Grendel. Attitude? What attitude? Plus the shocking climax of Army of Darkness. Extra, Batman vs. Predator, The Mask, The Fugitive. And a Fugitive Comics? 20 Rutger Hauer videos to be won. That is so amazingly specific. 20 Rutger Hauer videos to be won. Better have Split Second or we riot. 9 has the Dave Dorman Aliens vs. Predator cover that was also used for an issue of Hero Illustrated that I thought I had and don't. It's got the Predator saying, "Get down." New this issue, Aliens Predator, Deadliest of the Species, free Predator postcard, plus comics, Batman vs. Predator, the thrilling climax, Grendel, the mask, extra features, Bruce Lee, Reservoir Dogs, win Fugitive shirts, Army of Darkness videos, and then issue 10 of Total Carnage, featuring a fuchsia background and banner. Very curious choice, but it was the 90s. This is the cover for Aliens vs. Predator, Deadliest of the Species number 1, Nightmare Hunter, Action Director Supreme John Woo interviewed, extra, Grendel, Into the Heart of Darkness, The Mask, Mirthful Mayhem, 5 Mortal Kombat games, and Steven Seagal videos to be won.
What's your problem?
So the thing with Total Carnage is I think that they started soliciting it for the US audiences in December of 93. I don't recall seeing this solicited previously, and there's a blurb saying now available in the US, so it seems like it's a new thing. Comics with Attitude are here. Dark Horse International's hard-hitting action anthology Total Carnage is available for sale in the USA for the first time this month, and its gritty lineup certainly packs plenty of punch. There's Aliens Predator, the Deadliest of the Species, by the hot team of writer Chris Claremont, penciler Jackson Geis, and inker John Beatty. Plus a Predator solo story, which begins this issue. Predator Blood Feud by Neil Barrett Jr. and Leo Doronha. Matt Wagner's Grendel sets off on an African adventure, penciled by Patrick McCown. And to top it off, there's The Maniacal Mask in a story by John Arcudi and Doug Monkey. Plus a whole bunch of feature material focusing on top movie action meisters. And a roundup of hot Hollywood news. Advisory, suggested for mature readers. $2.95 US, $3.70 Canada, £50 UK. 48 color pages, magazine format, painted cover by John Bolton. Monthly, shipping December 28th, 1993. I bring this up because I had some trouble finding the covers to this magazine once I became aware of its existence to reference what material would be inside. At first, I was trying to bounce between Comic Vine and eBay, and then I had some gaps, and I realized, oh wait, it's probably on Xenopedia. Sure enough, they're all there. But the one issue that was at all the sites, including Mike's Amazing World of Comics, was at number 10. So I bet a bunch of people ordered this when it was finally available in the US, and the title immediately ends, and so everybody's got a 10, nobody's got any other issues outside of the UK. But anytime you search for Total Carnage on eBay, it's just a whole bunch of 10s, and you have to go hunting around to find anything else. Basically, in the lead up to Alien 3, they wanted the Aliens magazine to focus on aliens, and then they stuck all the Predator and other Dark Horse stuff, as Dark Horse surely wanted to sell their properties in the UK. They stuck all that in Total Carnage, and that also included the Aliens vs. Predator stuff. I hadn't noticed that they weren't popping up in the Aliens magazine. It does occur to me, though, that they don't have reprints for those magazines in the omnibuses, to my recollection, but also it doesn't appear that there was any original artwork, so who cares, really? We have the internet. The Xenopedia also notes that articles were primarily written by Dave Hughes, while issues were jointly edited by Dick Hansom and Kevin Ridout. Poor sales saw the magazine being canceled after 10 issues. Cut short by this cancellation was the magazine's reprints of Predator Blood Feud, which was left incomplete after just one installment, and Aliens vs. Predator Deadliest of the Species, which ended after two installments. And in the trivia section, the free Predator postcard given away with issue 9 is actually half an image that could be completed with a free Aliens postcard given away with Aliens Magazine, Volume 2, Number 17, published the previous month by Dark Horse International. So if, like me, you didn't know, now you know. Flipping through the 29th issue of Dark Horse Insider, cover dated May 1994, Martha Washington is on the cover. She's about to go to war. There's solicitation for a Bone Limited Edition Cold Cast figurine, $99.95. Predator 2 Cold Cast figure kit, $150. Wolfman Cold Cast figure kit, same price. Classic Star Wars Volume 1, advance solicited for June 28th, 1994. Fourth issue of Hellhounds Panzer Corps, which appears to be a Japanese import. Caravan Kid, Ditto, Bubblegum Crisis, Grand Mal, This Is Homegrown, Adam Warren. There's a three-page preview of Will to Power, one of the Comic Greatest World crossovers with art by Mike Manley, written by Jerry Prosser. Mez Galactic Tour by Mike Barron and Mike Vosburgh. I would assume this has something to do with Nexus. I don't know. I've never really read Nexus in a great degree. The latest issue of X, number 5, with Doug Monkey artwork. Out of the Vortex, number 8. Catalyst Agents of Change, number 4. Titan Special with a Bart Sears cover. Barbed Wire, number 2, art by Dan Lawless. Really underrated talent. Love his stuff. Dark Horse Comics, number 21. Indiana Jones and the Arms of Gold, number 4. An original two-page Tales of the Mask comic strip by Arcudi and Rich Heaton, part 7. Star Wars Droids, number 2. Classic Star Wars, number 20. Ian Fleming's James Bond 007, Shattered Helix, number 1 of 2, by Simon Jowett and David Jackson. Inked by David Lloyd. Aliens Predator, Deadliest of the Species, number 6. Predator Bad Blood, number 4. Dark Horse Down Under, number 1 of 3. Dark Horse Presents, number 85. Enemy, number 1 of 5, by Stephen Grant and Christopher Schenck, with covers by Mike Zeck. My understanding is that was adapted into a TV pilot that was not picked up. I'm surprised that's, to my knowledge, never hit the convention scene. I would pick that up if I found a bootleg of that, but I never have. Andrew Box's Underground, number 4. White Like She, number 1, a Bob Fingerman miniseries. I've got that one. Read it a long time ago. Haven't picked it up since. Like Bob Fingerman, though. Joe R. Lansdale's by Bizarre Hands, number 3. Johnny Demon, number 1, by the creative team of Kurt Busiek and Neil Vokes. Rack and Pain, number 4, by Polito and Jimenez. Very Chaos Comics. I've referenced that in the past. Grindle Tales, The Devil in Our Midst, number 1. That's a Steven Siegel and Paul Grist joint. Danger Unlimited, number 404. That's old John Byrne and Kieron Dwyer, his former stepson. Mike Mignola's Hellboy, Seed of Destruction, number 3 of 4. That was the original miniseries, right? Yeah, John Byrne's still scripting it. Next Men Power, number 3 of 4. Not sure where that is in the ongoing Next Men continuity, numbering, yada yada. Interview with Frank Miller and Dave Gibbons on Martha Washington Goes to War. But most importantly for our purposes, Alien Stronghold. New miniseries debuts. Shipping May 10th, 1994. On an apparently routine supply run, Philip and Joyce Strunk deliver a shipment of synthetic photoreceptors to Casper Nordling, a biotechnologist for Grant Corporation. When the Strunks find out that Nordling's experiments have exceeded Stanislav Mayakovsky's work as seen in Alien's Hive, they realize there's more to Nordling and aliens than meets the eye. No one will want to miss this offbeat, high-action thriller from the writer-artist team that brought you The Mask and The Mask Returns. This was your first time reading the story. Can you give us an overview of what you read?
So there's this mad professor that is experimenting on the aliens, or I guess studying the aliens. He's pretty much stuck on a base with nothing but androids who can't communicate with him. They don't really, I guess, mentally stimulate him. They're just kind of there to take care of him and take care of the day-to-day needs of the aliens. They do have one android that is an alien android that goes amongst the aliens, I guess, to see him. And they send a husband and wife team to kind of check up on the base to see what's going on. It almost felt like they were just there to kind of do like an evaluation. I can't remember the doctor's name offhand. The alien android presents himself. The doctor makes him do this trick where he makes him smoke a cigar where his little mouth shoots out. This husband and wife team talk to the doctor. They're evaluating what's going on there at the base. They're talking to the androids. The dude's really abusive. He has one female android that you can tell he gets too friendly with.
The June 1994 cover dated Dark Horse Insider number 30 with a Bart Sears Titan, was it? Titan and X cover. This issue features a short preview of the Ghost series, initially by Eric Luke and Matt Haley. There's the first issue of the Time Cop adaptation by Mark Verheyden and Ron Randall. There's a lot of hype about the Will to Power miniseries, but it's a Comics Greatest World story, so Chapter 8 of the Mask strip. Reprint of Marvel's classic Star Wars A New Hope movie adaptation, this time with Art Adams cover, which is Sublime, Indiana Jones and the Golden Fleece number 1 by David Rawson and Pat McGreal with Ken Hooper and Stan Walsh, an interview with Michael William Kaluta and Joel Goss on The Shadow, first of 2-issue adaptation written by Kaluta and Goss, illustrated by Kaluta, painted cover by Kaluta. You know, I don't recall ever checking that out. I really ought to. I want to see how Kaluta draws Penelope Ann Miller. There's a sneak preview of Paul Chadwick's Concrete Killer Smile, and copy from Alien Stronghold reads, after watching Casper Nordling conduct nearly sadistic experiments on an alien chestburster, Philip and Joyce Strunk question Nordling's motivations and consider bringing the scientists up on charges. But will Nordling's synthetic alien allow them to do it? The suspense mounts. Monthly, shipping June 14th, 1994.
The husband and wife team start going over the books and stuff and seeing a lot of discrepancies. Turns out some of the alien eggs are disappearing, or the queen eggs are disappearing. It turns out that the doctor is selling them to another corporation. They're there to buy the eggs. The dude was kind of fucked up in the head because like the group that's buying the eggs from him gave him fake money, so he gave him these killer cigars. The story seemed to be that the doctor just kind of went crazy because the only things around him were either aliens or androids, and he just slowly went mad.
And totally corrupt too. Contact. I don't even know if he's really mad. I think he's just completely corrupt and has no more morals, like, because he's been surrounded by things that he doesn't see as human, so he just does whatever the fuck he wants to. Well, and if he's raping an android or whatever, it doesn't matter, you know?
When I was reading, I'm like, okay, Frank gave me this for a reason. It was some kind of deep meaning, so the only thing I could come up with is the aliens are all instinct, and the androids have no instinct, no soul. So his moral compass really has nothing to compare itself to. So it's almost like his moral compass just goes spinning out of control, because the aliens are running on instinct, and the androids are whatever you tell them.
Well, the thing is, you're giving me more credit than I deserve, because you're going like really deep into trying to find subtext and stuff.
I was like, you know, I treated it almost like I was in an exam. I'm like, okay, Frank gave me this story, so I got to really read it. I'm going to really pay attention. You know, I'm bad with names, so of course all the names flew by me, but I'm like, I got to read the gist of this story, because I know Frank's going to be like, well, did you know in 1984, the writer of the story, da, da, and I was like, so he's going to try to Frank the fuck out of me. So I'm like, let me really read this. So I was like, almost like Shakespeare. I'm reading it like, okay, why did the scientists go insane? Because his moral compass doesn't have anything. That's how I read it. I was trying to get
it. And it's true. See, the thing is, it does suit you because you tend to like the anti-heroes or the Breaking Bad type characters. You like the stories where somebody goes the wrong way and does the wrong thing. So it does kind of suit you, but that wasn't the plan. What happened was I started doing this Aliens podcast. The first few ones I did completely on my own. People expressed an interest in being guests or talking about specific stories. We've done all those stories. I always knew that I had my boys in the back of my pocket just in case I needed you. And now I'm in this gap period where most of people's interest has tapered off, and people are going to be interested again once they start doing the crossovers and the team-ups and stuff. And I got to get through this hump. So you're my hump people, basically.
Okay.
But also because I knew you liked the creative team, particularly Doug Monkey, but also you liked John Arcudi. That was really all there was to it. But yeah, you're right. The Breaking Bad aspect of it certainly suits you. But it is a little weird because I'm bringing you in for this first time, and while you definitely are a fan of Aliens, you're not like a deep reader into the series or anything. And it's funny because none of the people that were deep readers hung on this long and have talked a lot about how it would be nice if there were more continuity from story to story and not have repetition where some guy didn't read another guy's story and he's basically doing the same thing. This is the nexus point of continuity because they referenced the book about the guy who created the artificial alien from Hive that you read, the Kelly Jones miniseries. And they've created another one, basically, and this one talks and smokes cigars. And then you've got another mad scientist who's off in the nether realms doing his thing, and he's gone nuts. And so you've sent people to investigate him. That happened in 2 miniseries so far. It happened in Labyrinth, and it happened in Rogue. And then they have the Grant Corporation, which was the people who were involved with the Genocide miniseries that you mentioned earlier, where you've got the 2 different warring factions of aliens going up against each other. And they've got the suits that have the gel that negate the acid, so they're able to fight more effectively. So they're referencing that. So there's all these points of reference in the story, and they're also advancing stuff. They have like a berserker type armor, which they had in the painted. Did you ever read the painted graphic novel that Dave Dorman did?
No.
So they had this guy in this armored suit that could go in there and kill aliens, and the armor would help to protect him so that he wouldn't get killed. He was just like a total psycho badass. And this one, it's actually a robot, and the robot's a little tweaked, but it still does kind of what it needs to do. Cool. All this shit from all the other miniseries, like, it's clear that instead of not having read any of them, he's read all of them and is incorporating all all of them into this one story. And so all these guys who are more into the ongoing narrative, they've already fucked off and left after Alien 3 for the most part. And so they're missing this. And you, who haven't read most of the shit, doesn't get to see all that stuff. So I'm seeing the connective tissue, so I can get caught on that. But for you, it's more about the story.
The July 1994 cover dated Dark Horse Insider number 31 has production stills from The Mask movie with Jim Carrey, preview art from Jim Silkey's Rascals in Paradise, solicitation for Madman Bubblegum Cards, $14.95, $20.95 Canada, color 50 card box set, $19.95 US, $27.95 Canada, color 50 card uncut sheet. Shipping August 30th, 1994 from the Legend imprint. Madman by 50, Bubblegum not included. Madman Comics is one of the hottest comics to rear its ugly head in a long time. To celebrate its recent arrival at Dark Horse, we're issuing a 50 card series revealing the 50 faces of Madman. It features artwork of some of the greatest names in comics, including such luminaries as Frank Miller, Alex Toth, Matt Wagner, Art Adams, and even Jack Kirby. Madman creator Michael Allred has colored most of the cards himself in the same process the studios use to color animation cells. And let me tell you, these babies pop. You can get the series as a box set or an uncut sheet, and if you can't make up your mind, you can get them both. You've also got the dueling miniseries Badger, the Zen Pop Funny Animal Version by Mike Baron and Stephen Butler with Matt Haley, and Badger Shattered Image by Mike Baron and Jill Thompson. So one's the fun version, one's the serious version. Both are picking up from the first comic series. I think those were the first Badger books that Dark Horse put out after they helped untangle the rights. There's a trade paperback collection of The Mask Returns by Arcudi and Monkey, as well as the movie adaptation by Mike Richardson and Killian Plunkett. There's the Ghost Special number one by Haley and Luke. The latest issue of X, number 6, now has art by P. Craig Russ and Ron Wagner. Will to Power continues. Solicitation for Predator and Invaders from the Fourth Dimension. Tales of the Mask, Part 9, strip continues. Trade paperback collection of Star Wars, Tales of the Jedi. There isn't a subtitle of the subtitle, so I guess it's the first time they did that. Written by Tom Veitch, illustrated by Chris Gossett, Mike Barrero, Janine Johnston, and David Roach with a painted Dave Dorman cover. Which is good timing, because the next Star Wars, Tales of the Jedi miniseries, The Freedon Nad Uprising, number 1 of 2, is featured this month. Written by Tom Veitch, pencils by Tony Akins, inks by Dennis Rodier, painted cover by Dave Dorman. There's the first issue of the Shadow Empire's Faith Conquers miniseries, 1 of 4, script and painted art by Chris Mahler. There's the Devil Chef one-shot by Jack Pollock, Rascals in Paradise number 1 of 3 by Jim Silkey, Babe number 1 by John Byrne with colors by Matt Webb, A Conversation with Paul Chadwick on Concrete, and of course, solicitation copy for Alien Stronghold number 3 of 4. When you mix the fierce intensity of the aliens with the talent of John Arcudi and Doug Monkey, the team responsible for the lunacy of The Mask, you can expect that all of the questions you were ever afraid to ask would finally be answered. Can an alien truly appreciate a hand-rolled, long-filler Cuban cigar? Now you'll know. You'll definitely want to make the break for this twisted combination of humor and horror. Just so you know, Make the Break was a promotional campaign. I think it was just trying to say, hey, break away from the mainstream comics and read something different. I don't recall if it was Dark Horse specific or not, but I think so.
The mad scientist is selling some queen eggs to, again, a rival corporation that they're there to get it. He hands him some cigars. One of those guys, as he's walking out, tells Jerry, the alien android, hey, do that trick with the cigar. And he does it with one of the cigars the doctor had given him. So he has that locked, I guess, in his stomach. Turns out they've been giving him fake money. He knows it, but he doesn't really give a shit. Like, he's just like, eh, don't give a shit. Just like, you know, I'm going to do my thing. They take off. The mad scientist invites the couple. Not evaluate. God dang, there's a term
inspect?
For it. There's a
inspect. Investigate?
Yeah.
Because they're looking for abuses, basically, and they're auditing him to a large degree.
Auditing. Thank you. Auditing him. And so they're auditing him. So he invites them to dinner, and of course, he spikes their dinner. They pass out. They wake up. They're inside where the alien creatures are kept. The androids can walk around the aliens because they don't give off a pheromone, or they can't be sensed. But once they're visually seen, they get attacked and torn apart. There's one android that rebuilds the androids. The alien android goes in there and rescues the humans because they can't harm humans, but they can't let them be harmed either. And so he rescues them. They're going to escape. The couple, with the help of the alien, or the android alien, escape. They're going to go. They confront the scientist, thinking that, you know, maybe some of the other androids were the androids that were spying. It turns out it was a female android that the professor or the mad scientist has been getting a little too overly close with. A fight ensues. The android alien gets knocked into a room with, you're right, he's like, what is he, like some kind of killer android.
He's just like a big armored mech, essentially.
Yeah, he's just there to kill him. And every time he's about to kill the android alien. The android alien will speak, and then it'll recognize him and shut down. But even he's
Dean, like, it's all, me, it's Jerry. So, quit pointing your gun at me.
Yeah, Jerry. There you go. And so, you know, the alien confronts him. The androids kind of have a sense like they don't like what's going on, but they can't challenge it because it goes against their programming. And all hell breaks loose. The doctor pulls a gun out on the couple, but he's not really a weapons kind of guy. They get the weapon away from him. The female android gets in the way. She gets damaged. They escape. The aliens are now breaking loose from their cage where they're producing the queen eggs. Of course, the rival gang or the rival corporation are flying. They light the cigar, kills them all. That's when you learn the cigars are dangerous.
Dark Horse Insider number 32, cover dated August 1994. We've got Arthur Adams wasting his talents on some of these comics' greatest world characters, I think Division 13. It's blue guy with an axe that looks African-American and white chick with really long fingers and toes. Inside front cover has Evan Dorkin's Milk and Cheese saying, "Beware, we are coming for you." There's a solicitation for the Aliens Earth Angel one-shot. John Byrne's Next Men Lies sub-story begins. This is Next Men number 27, but Lies part 1 of 4. There's the Complete Concrete trade paperback collection, which seems a bit faulty because the Killer Smile miniseries is currently ongoing. There's American Splendor Special, A Step Out of the Nest. This was the one-shot drawn by Joe Zabel. There's also a conversation with Harvey Pekar. Instant Piano number 1 is solicited. I'm sure this has been forgotten by the majority of people. Not a jury in the world would convict these guys of premeditated humor. Instant Piano is the snappiest slap-in-the-face comic to hit the racks in years and presents the most sharp-witted, cynical cartoonists alive, including Mark Badger, Kyle Baker, Robbie Bush, Steven DeStefano, and Evan Dorkin. If this one was any more spontaneous, it would combust on the shelves. If he told you it was like Milk and Cheese meets Ren and Stimpy meets Why I Hate Saturn, we would probably be looking at a lawsuit. So just trust us when we say it's good. This premiere issue features a color cover by Kyle Baker. There's the new Two-Fisted Tales Volume 2, Number 1, featuring stories by Harvey Kurtzman, Leo Doronia, Don Rose Lomax, John Garcia, and a reprint of a Wally Wood story. Classic Star Wars The Early Adventures Begins, written and illustrated by Russ Manning, retouched by Rick Hoberg. I'm not enough of a Warzy, I'm not any kind of a Warzy, so I'm not sure from where this is being reprinted. I'm guessing the newspaper strip. They also start their reprints of the Empire Strikes Back adaptation by Archie Goodwin and Al Williamson, Tales of the Mask Part 10, the Aliens Rogue Collection with the Nelson painted cover, Aliens Predator Deliverance of the Species Number 7. Wow, World Power ran 12 issues. That's a whole lot of comic books. Oh, there's only a dollar each? Somehow I ended up not buying any of those. Confirmation that the cover feature was Division 13, written by Keith Giffen, art by Alex Morrissey. There's also a conversation with Keith Giffen on that book. That was in that time period where I bought a bunch of first issues by Keith Giffen and not a whole lot of second and third, unfortunately. There's X One Shot to the Head that collects a bunch of stories from Dark Horse Comics, the Comics Greatest World event, all in one place. Oh, the first issue of Oh My Goddess. Very long-running manga series. Dark Horse carried that book for ages. I remember selling that pretty much throughout my time at the old comic shop. Also a trade collection of Masamune Shiro's Orion. But of course, for our purposes, Stronghold number 404. Rebellious androids, secret investigators, and escaped xenomorphs. It looks as though Casper Nordling's perfect world is about to collapse. But Nordling may still have an ugly trip up his sleeve. This final issue features 27 pulse-pounding pages of story and art, and includes a preview of the new series Aliens Berserker by writer John Wagner, Judge Dredd, and penciler Paul Mendoza, Dark Horse Comics. Sadly, we will not be covering that miniseries next month. Look for that in July instead.
Next thing you know, it's All On War. The androids with the mech warrior and the alien android are all fighting the aliens. The couple are trying to get away, trying to get to a ship. I believe they get on a ship. I can't remember the ending. I just remember the very ending, because the very ending is the professor or the mad scientist is leaving. He leaves the female android behind. All the androids get wiped out. Even the big mech guy gets overpowered by the aliens. And the end is Jerry popping up on the mad scientist and lighting the cigar. And the mad scientist had talked about how he had created these weaponized viruses. And one of them was in a cigar that would kill you instantly. And Jerry lights it in front of him. And you can already see the scientist's face like start to melt.
He used the cigar trick with the android just as a gag. But he also, since he sort of associated himself with cigars as sort of his trademark, he'd also give people cigars at the end of transactions. And some of the cigars had a virus in them that was triggered by heat. So once you lit the cigars, you would melt and die. It was a horrible Ebola type thing. And because the Jerry alien android had been damaged by all that had happened, it no longer had the thing that stopped it from harming humans. And that's how he was able to light the cigar and kill the mad scientist guy.
Yes.
And I don't know if you caught it, but the alien is Jerry. The big robot is Dean. Dean and Jerry, Jerry Lewis, Dean Martin.
I never caught that just now.
So what did you think? By the way, now, did you read Arcudi and Monkey in their earliest stuff when they were doing the mask? Because they basically were, they didn't create the mask, but they popularized it with their miniseries because they were the ones who did the real violent mayhem version of the character that sort of inspired the Jim Carrey version. But obviously that's like the baby PG version. What, they did the R-rated
one. What was the main villain in it? That was like this big brooding guy.
Yeah, that thuggish guy who was sort of like a Terminator, but he was just a human. But he was just like, he's like Violet Marr, basically, like a prototype of Violet Marr.
I mean, I have some of that stuff. I haven't really read it.
I'm surprised. I thought that would have been your speed when it was coming out.
I remember reading it because it is ultraviolet. Like, I've read, there's two series. I think I read the second series where the girlfriend gets the mask and she's running around with a mask too. But yeah, no, I've read them, but it's been a long time since I've read them. I mean, we're talking back in the 90s when they came out.
So your main frame of reference for them then is Major Bummer.
Yes.
But what did you think about this middle period? Because you missed most of the mass stuff. You got the Major Bummer stuff. This is somewhere in between. How'd you like the miniseries?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty cool. You mean the alien stuff?
Yeah, the miniseries we just talked about. Any thoughts on it?
I
enjoyed it.
I definitely feel like they definitely alluded to other books and stuff. Did they? It felt like there was other series that
heavily. This book had more continuity than any other Aliens book I've ever read.
Yeah, so that was the only thing. I kind of wanted to go back and read some of that other stuff that it alluded to, but I enjoyed it. It was cool. It definitely felt like right up their alley.
And some of that art was pretty detailed. What did you think about that?
It was good. It wasn't Doug's best work, but it was still good. I still think his Major Bummer stuff is some of the best he's done. Some of his Superman stuff is fantastic. No, but it was good. I mean, I liked it.
Yeah, on this one, he inks himself in the first issue. The rest are done by Jimmy Palmiotti. I like Jimmy Palmiotti as a person. I'm not a huge fan of him as an inker. I like him when he does more of a Bill Sienkiewicz kind of thing. When he's just doing his own thing, I don't really feel like he brings a lot to it, with the exception of, you know, Joe Quesada. I still feel like I enjoyed Joe Quesada more when Palmiotti was inking him than any other time in his career. But I think that Christian Alame started inking him when he was doing Green Lantern and gave him a really Brian Bolland quality. And I always really loved Christian Alame on his own, but he didn't produce a lot of work. He was too slow. But the combination of those two, I think, was the best work of Monkey's career, among the best work of Alame's career. Certainly as an inker, I think it's his best work. I just thought they were an incredible combination.
Mm-hmm.
So you were saying before we started recording that you were wondering why I would ask you to read this particular miniseries. You don't have any clue as to why that would be?
No. I thought you were just fucking bored. You were like, let me fuck with him for a while.
Well, did you happen to catch the creative team on the book?
Doug Monkey. I'm a big Doug Monkey fan. And what was the writer? The writer was, remind me?
John Arcudi.
John Arcudi, yeah. And I did like Arcudi some. I liked some of his stuff.
You liked Major Bummer. They were the creative team on the Major Bummer series. And you also like Hellboy's Expanded Universe, which John Arcudi wrote a bunch of. And you're a big fan of Doug Monkey's art, to the point where you actually communicated with him and bought original artwork from him. Or at least his inker, right?
No. I spoke to Doug Monkey and I bought actual Major Bummer artwork. Like at one page of the villain. And one page of the heroes. And then he was like, hey, I just drew this Martial Manhunter comic. Would you be interested in a page? I'm like, yes, I would. And that's the one I told you I got where he's, I think I asked you about why he's so fascinated with Oreos.
Right. That's what inspired you to ask me about that. Yep.
So yeah, I'm a huge Doug Monkey fan. I wish he did more work. But yeah, his shit is cool.
Weren't you buying stuff from his inker as well? Like, didn't he have an inker that he was working with on JLA that you were getting stuff from it also?
At one time, I was I had all their emails. Well, not their personal emails, but like their business emails. So, like, I was emailing Eric Powell because I bought Eric Powell art, or he did. He was inking Joe Fixit for, what's that fucking dude's name?
Yeah, I forgot about Eric Powell. You were buddying up with him. I kept hearing Powell.
Yeah, because
like
he sent me some goon. He sent me a Hulk sketch, like half a sketch for free. And then he sent me like this little goon sketch he did that he inked, which I was like, holy shit. I was going after some DC guys. I remember like Evan Dorkin. I got some Evan Dorkin stuff. I mean, it was just different people. And I looked out where I wasn't buying from shops. I was actually contacting the artist. Every once in a while, the artists will throw their like, hey, this is my email, you want to send anything? And that's how I got a lot of my artwork, was actually through the actual artist.
Well, you were also in the early days of eBay when you could get really super like $20 deals on pages and stuff.
That was like, well, that's when I was chasing my Fixit stuff. I'm trying to think of some of my other artwork that took, like the Tex Air, I was emailing him when I bought that Wolverine page. The ones that I got from eBay would be like the Joe Fixit, some of the Hulk stuff. I have multiple Del Keones, but one Keone I did get from his inker. I did get a Punisher page by Mike Zeck, but I got that from the inker. But that's the one that's damaged.
Yeah, water damage.
That's why the guy gave me such a good deal on it, because it was water damage in a corner. I was like, don't give a shit, dude. It got the Predator. It has the Punisher killing somebody with a blade, or at least about to.
Look, it's so, Zeck stuff is hard to come by these days.
The what now?
Zeck doesn't produce anything anymore, hardly. So just having a Zeck is enviable.
And the thing was, I believe, I can't remember the inker, but he was selling the stuff for, I mean, it was at the time a little high, but there was this one page that he just wanted like $25 for. There was not an image. It was just like, yeah, I got some, I think he said throwaway pages for $25. I'm like, I'll take one. And he sent me that one. There's water damage in the corner, but it's the Punisher, Mike Zeck's Punisher, fucking sitting there with a fucking, like a knife, Minotaur knife.
So you if gave it's the Zeck Punisher, it's probably from the miniseries then, right?
I think so. I think it's from the miniseries. I have to go look. Dude, I haven't seen some of these pages in years. They're in my little binder that I look at every once in a while. But I honestly haven't looked at. The one I still kick myself in the ass for is not buying that fucking Alex Ross sketch of the robot. And I've told you the story before, where he's like, I was on his website and he's just throwing a bunch of like little sketches up there. And he's like, yeah, these are like, you know, $30. And I'm like, it's just a sketch. It's not ink. But it was a full sketch of some Japanese robot that Marvel had. That was the cheapest one. Like, the other ones were already in the 60-70 range. And I'm like, doc, I should have picked that up. I could have had an Alex Ross sketch. That would have been kind of cool.
There's a thing we do on the show that was started by one of the previous guests, where essentially you got to pick a page of artwork that you would want to have. If you could only have one page of artwork from this miniseries, what page would you want?
That's the one where the mech and Jerry and all the androids are fighting the wave of aliens coming at them down the hallway.
Is the one where it's like an overhead view?
Yeah,
that's a pretty cool shot. I'm trying to see which one
I would
mine
say
would
that's
be.
Probably the best. If I was going to get one of the pages, that's what I would want.
There's another really good one where it's straight on and you get a real good shot of Dean and how much taller he is than all the other humans. And you've got the African-American husband kind of looking like straight on at the aliens, freaked out, got a scared face on. He's got his gun, but he ain't shit, because he's like, oh shit. That's a cool one too. I usually don't try to pick a cover, but the cover to issue 4, which I also used as the album art for this episode.
Well, the cover I sent you was the one I liked. It's the one where it shows Jerry with a cigar shooting a gun.
Oh, and now, is that the cover of the trade paperback?
I think so.
It's got like a star-shaped explosions as he's shooting.
Yes.
Yeah, that's actually Duncan Fegredo. He did the cover for the trade paperback.
Yeah, I really like that one.
Yeah, that one is pretty cool too.
I was like, let me let Frank know I am reading it, and this is what I'm reading.
You know, Doug Monkey, as you'll recall, was really into physical fitness. He was a bodybuilder, and he used to talk to you a lot about, like, because you were both doing gym stuff a lot at the same time, kind of comparing notes and stuff. And so he obviously really loves drawing Dean, and Dean looks really cool. There's that one splash page where it's just Dean blasting aliens in one of the earlier issues, and it's a profile, so you really get to see his, you know, the mech arms, mech ass, mech, you know, everything else, and that looks really cool too. But like, honestly, I don't usually like to go with the covers, but the cover to 4 I dig, where it's Dean and Jerry blasting the aliens in the hallway. So anything else you want to talk about with relation to aliens or this particular story?
No, I mean, that was fun. I'd like to do another one, because the story I was familiar with was Stronghold actually turns out to be one of Freihold's favorite stories.
I wish he'd told me that.
Yeah, because when I went to bar, because he owns all the trade or the trades, and I was like, hey, I'm looking for one specifically, because I have one, but Stronghold's not in it. So he goes and he goes, well, you know, take care of this book. It's my favorite book. That's my favorite story. And I'm like, which one is it? And he goes straight to Stronghold. I'm like, oh shit, well, that's the one I gotta read.
I tended to give him more of the Predator stuff, the alien stuff. So oopsie.
Yeah.
He didn't tell me. How would I know?
I would like to read Hive. I haven't read that since I bought it back in maybe the late 80s, early 90s, maybe, when it came out.
Yeah, and that was way more of a horror story. It's very moody. It's much more like Ridley Scott's Alien.
Really? Yeah. I remember there was a time when I used to go to New Horizon. That's kind of when I was reading more Dark Horse. Because I remember buying my Dark Horse comics there, my Heavy Metal comics there. And that's about when the Infinity Gauntlet started. So I was picking my Infinity Gauntlet trades there. I picked up my, what was that, 2-issue Thanos where he's collecting the stones. I picked them up there. So, but that was kind of, I was kind of collecting. So that was before your shop. I was kind of collecting that stuff there. And then I found your shop, and that's, I think you turned me more toward the Marvel stuff, because my uncle who got me into comics, I did read some Marvel, very little DC, but I read a lot of, like, you know, I remember trying to read Flaming Carrot. I'm trying to think, what else did he give me? Like, Too Much Coffee Man, because he was really into the independent shit. Like, The Crow. I remember he had The Crow, like, first printings of him. He even had, like, a print that they had done for The Crow. I remember reading The Crow, his issues of The Crow. Let's see, what else? He got me into Faust.
Yeah, still, I was trying to do a reading of Faust. I've never read it all the way through, and I've got most of the issues now. So that's something I've been meaning to. I started reading it a few issues in, but it's kind of tough, especially the early issues. Is it tough to get through?
I don't remember if I enjoyed it. I just remember it being, like, gory as hell.
Yeah, and very sexual. Very, very sexual.
Yes.
But also lots of Zipitone, and for me, that is sexual in and of itself. I love these some Zipitone, really? Man.
I was just joking. I was going through my collection, and some of the first trades I ever bought were Marvel trades. Like, I found my Volt trade, but I don't ever remember that one.
Yeah, that's one of the ones. Was it the Magazine thing in size? That one?
Huh?
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I think I know which one you're talking about. It's one of the Marvel graphic novels, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that's when I was kind of into graphic novels for a while. Like, I was picking up a lot of graphic novels. But yeah, I'm trying to think, like, you know, my uncle got me into a lot of weird independent stuff that I tried to get into. Aliens, Predator was about as independent as I got. I couldn't read some of that other stuff he was into. Like, well, the Kitchen Sink Comics.
You like artwork, or at least you very much liked artwork in that time period. Art on the indie books just isn't as strong, typically.
True.
And so, like, for me, I tried I did my turn in the indie books, and like you said, I tried Too Much Coffee Man. I tried Reed Fleming World's Angriest Milkman. I tried Flaming Carrot and the Mystery Men stuff. And really the only stuff that stuck from that period, or one of the only ones, was the Evan Dorkin stuff.
Milk and Cheese.
Yeah, Milk and Cheese, and also just Dork. You know, Minimum Wage stuck, Hate stuck, Peter Baggy. And I like the John Lewis
Concrete
stuff.
I remember Concrete stuck with me.
Yeah, Concrete's good. It's just that it's... Well, actually, part of it is I loaned you my trades and I never got them back.
No, you didn't, you bastard.
Did I get them back? I don't think I got them back, man.
Yes, I don't think I did. You were like, I bought them from your shop because I got the little mini
You didn't
train.
Buy those, or you might have bought some of them. I was getting the... I think they were the little omnibus ones or something. And I loaned those to you. And and the other day, too, like, they in this month's previews, they're soliciting a Hellboy omnibus where it's supposed to have pretty much all the Mike Mignola stuff, all the core stuff in one big book, kind of like the way they did Big Damn Sin City. And I was like, yeah, I was going to read that stuff. What happened? It's like, I remembered, oh, yeah, I got those omnibuses and then you took them. And I never got them back.
Oh, which ones?
The Hellboy one. I don't have the Hellboy omnibuses anymore. You're like, let me borrow that. I'm like, okay. And then never saw it again.
I don't have Hellboy, dude. I borrowed Frank Freihold's Hellboy stuff.
No, I think you borrowed mine. I never give them back.
I swear to God, dude. I'll let you go through my shelves. There is no Hellboy on there.
Okay.
All the Hellboy stuff I've ever read was from Freihold.
Okay. Well, I know that I had some Hellboy and I no longer have any Hellboy. So I'm thinking about...
The only trade of yours I have is your Grendel, the last one with Grendel Prime, because I'm rereading that, which I need to pick up my own. I'm just going to buy my own now.
Well, I mean, at some point, that's going to have to get re-released in an omnibus, I would think, too. But see, Grendel's one of the few books that's still being published by Dark Horse. Because, like, I haven't got you any of my previews lately. I've got a small stack of previews to get over to you. Dark Horse isn't even in the premiere section anymore. They've gone into, like, this little subsection that's, like, among the basic titles. So they don't have, like, big section with their own artwork and stuff anymore. So it's really easy to overlook them. And I'm like, man, with them back here, I'm probably going to be ordering less Dark Horse stuff. And this month's previews has so much fucking Dark Horse stuff that's so expensive. It's like, oh shit, I might be spending almost all my money on the Dark Horse shit this time, especially if I end up getting that omnibus.
Because after reading yours, I'm like, damn, I need to pick these up now, these omnibus of Grendel, because I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I got to read some of that stuff on my cruise, but I didn't believe that the original graphic novel was prose. I thought that this was like a recap of what had happened in the original Grendel stories. And so I stopped reading, and then come to find out, like, you and I went to a Half-Price Books and I managed to find a copy of the original Kamiko graphic novel collection of the serial that ran in Mage. And it turns out, they were prose backups, and it is only available as a prose story, heavily illustrated prose. But it's like, oh shit. So I stopped partway through the prose story, and you know how it's kind of hard to go back into a book, you know, a comic book you're going to typically finish, where you can find your place fairly easily, where when it's a prose story, it's like, there's probably a lot of information I'm going to need to just go ahead and reread to reacquaint myself with. So I haven't gotten back to it yet.
Dang.
A little supplemental information as we head out. It is possible that Freihold did tell me about Stronghold. I'd have to go back and listen to material recorded for the Aliens vs. Predator
episode, which was quite a while back now. Usually when I'm slotting people in on the schedule, I base it on social media interactions, direct messages, that sort of thing. With Fryhole, it's pure conversation. Maybe it slipped my mind. I haven't gone to check. I don't know for sure, but it's possible you told me about that. If so, I apologize. I also haven't covered the sales information in a while, so just as a frame of reference, the latter issues of Aliens Colonial Marines were selling initially in the early 20s out of Capital City Distribution, and then for the last three issues, they dropped into the teens. The final issue with a date of October 1993 was 14,650 copies. Aliens Labyrinth was out after that time period and still selling better overall in the same time period. First issue was 28,500, second was 21,975, third issue was 19,750, fourth issue 16,500. Alien Salvation one shot sold 19,050, but keep in mind it had a higher cover price. Still outsold by Sacrifice, surprisingly, 21,925. Just a reminder, Mike Mignola's art wasn't always everybody's taste. The Alien Special sold 20,099 copies. This is from June 1997, so this is after the market had already tanked and hadn't really come back yet. So I think that it was just a matter of the cover was appealing, the cover price at $250, half of the price for the two one-shots probably contributed to better sales. Also, there might be an absence allowing the heart to grow fonder, because I'm amazed at how it took me so long to get through 1993, and with Stronghold, we're almost done with 1994 already. So maybe the absence of Aliens product helped boost that book up, give it a more of a sense of being a moment. So as I mentioned, Music of the Spears was one of the books that haunted my chibi bins, but it still sold relatively well, at least initially, 20,225 copies through Capital City for number one, 16,150 for number two, so that is a pretty steep drop, 15,425 and 15,175, and that was all from the first quarter of 1994, so we're definitely into the bust at this point. That being the case, you would expect Stronghold to continue that downward trajectory, and it does. Number one has sales of 18,075 copies, 15,125 copies, 14,225 copies, and 13,400 copies. The trade paperback was apparently solicited in July 1997, so that's a little under 3 year wait. Oh, you know what? Now that I think about it, that was probably for the rebranded version with the John Bolton cover. They don't have a date for the one with the Duncan Fegredo cover. It should be noted that there was a second collected edition released July 1987 and retitled Aliens Volume 8 Stronghold. This release was part of Dark Horse's remastered Aliens Library Edition series, reprints that attempted to bring the content of all of Dark Horse's previously released Aliens comics in line with the updated continuity presented by Alien 3. The Stronghold trade paperback was edited by Jamie S. Rich and featured a new cover by John Bolton. Stronghold would prove to be the last Aliens comics collected as part of the Aliens Library Editions, although the Aliens Kidnapped trade paperback would later feature a similarly styled cover by John Bolton. So once again, Stronghold seems to have been where the line was drawn on a bunch of Alien stuff. Now, all that copy, by the way, was from Xenopedia. Stronghold was again collected in Aliens Omnibus Volume 4, released in 2008, and of course was released digitally and is now in the Marvel Omnibus. So on social media, we got attention from Between the Pages blog. Bucket List Becky liked the Dark Horse Presents Predator Omnibus Volume 1 Tumblr page. CH, Chris Dunford, Chris Lydon, The Comic Crush, Dear Watchers, an Omniversal Comic Book Podcast. I remember in the olden days when it was just a multiversal podcast, we just keep getting outsized, cosmically speaking. Dim Conkey, Dirk Ashton is finally finishing Kraken Rider Z. Ed Moore, History of Comics on Film, The Irredeemable Shag, Julia Raul, Super Turbo, Keith G. Baker, Lamar the Revenger, Mike It Send Aliens to Me, Moose Mattson the Hobo with the High Kick, Movie Matt Sirois, Paula, PhotoCar24 liked the Dark Horse Presents Aliens Music of the Spears Tumblr, Rihanna Mike, Richard Field, Siskoid, Superbound, Talk Nerdy to Me, Ufta, who added Got Something to Listen to Today, and Zwit Jameson.
This has been a Raw Old Spine podcast. All audio samples are believed covered under fair use laws. No copyright infringement is intended.
Coming in June, Dark Horse presents...
It's a secret!